dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial
code, source code, ISO. Hello, welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 131, with today's date, January 17th, 2006. I'm Black Ratchet, and we have Knot Theory this evening.
What's up, everybody?
Yes, we have Knot Theory, who may or may not sound jittery, because our VoIP situation sort of got wrapped around tonight, and we got to move over to my new server that's in my closet right now. My server's in the closet, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's unfortunately the problem is that I'm not sure how much bandwidth we have. So this is a stress test right here. We're doing live on the radio. Or
nice.
Live now, recorded for everyone else. So haha.
Right. Yeah, it was doing some weird stuff later, I got to tell you, but I think it was my phone. I think Windows Mobile strikes again.
Oh, maybe that could be you. Yeah, that's true. Because it doesn't sound like Eek's jittery or like VoIP jittery. It sounds like bad cell phone, so that could be it. Oh, I'm talking to you on your new cell phone.
Yeah, you're talking to me on the new phone through my Bluetooth headset. And I got to tell you, should we go through email and then talk about this, or
how yeah, do you want to do it? I actually think we should. We've got some slight housekeeping this evening. Archives for those of you paying attention, like all of you, they all have been caught up. We're still not live this week, so don't bother calling in. Dr. Sigmund has the night off. As you can also tell, Strom is still not here. He's currently in the Philippines on his world tour, going down and hacksawing the world's phone systems.
Nice.
Yes. All exciting. So, yes, yeah, so I'd just like to apologize once again for the archive situation over the past month or so. But it's caught up, and since this is not a live episode, this will be in the archives, because it's infinitely easier to update the archives when it's not live. So, there you go. I think that's it for the housekeeping. Do you have any housekeeping you would like to mention from your previous Visual Studio episode?
Other than I've seen some really weird stuff happening with Visual Studio lately, and I'm a lot less thrilled with it, since I managed to get Visual Studio to crash by hooking my Trio up and using ActiveSync.
Ouch.
I don't know what that's all about, but it was pretty spectacular. I mean, the machine ground to a halt for about 30 to 40 seconds, and then it said, which was really funny, Visual Studio crashed, but ActiveSync was still running, and it was just fine. But it only happened when I put my Trio in. So that was 2003. But have you really used your 2005 much since?
No, to be honest, I've been doing other things. My free time has gone quite downhill since the move. So, but I have fiddled with it a little bit, just not to the point that I really want to be. The entire my super elite mobile development has gone downhill because I've actually had more important things to do. But what little I've done, it's been working fine for me. So I still, cool. At least in my opinion, the title of the episode still stands. Visual Studio 2005 doesn't suck. Still.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely does not suck. And I would be doing a lot more mobile development too. But I actually just took a new job, so I'm preparing for that.
Moving up in the world.
No, not really, but. Actually, you know what? I may have some really cool stuff to tell people after I start the job, because there's a lot of technology in this job that I've not only never touched before, but never even seen before. So maybe I'll have some leet stuff to post on the net somewhere or talk
well,
about.
Well, I do have a question that will be related to this, but we'll get into this on the personal hacking story. Just
okay.
To prepare yourself, you've been asked this before on another episode, but. So let's go into the email. Our first email tonight is from Iron Geek. Actually, our first and third email tonight, I think, or first and second or something. Anyway, first email from Iron Geek. Hi, guys. In the last Bin Rev, a guy wrote about writing a game who was writing a game in True Basic. The website for the product is www.truebasic.com. I figure you already found that via Google. The gold version can do sockets, but it's not free. If you want to play Basic that is open source, multi-platform, Windows, Linux, and DOS, compiled and does sockets and threads, try FreeBASIC at www.freebasic.net. You can do API calls to the operating system and other fun stuff with it. If you want to find other modern version of BASIC, check out basic.mindtech.com. That tech is spelled with T-E-Q. Should have tiny URL'd that, but oh well. It has 74 basic compilers, some open source, some freeware, and some commercial. Thanks for the radio show and the forums, Iron Geek. Iron Geek, yes, you were right. I did Google a name after the show, and I later found out about it. Personally, I'll stick with C Sharp, but it does look pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm impressed that they've got Basic with. Visual Basic supports all these things, but something like Free Basic with sockets and threads and all that stuff. I mean. Impressive, but I would like to stick with something a little more mainstream.
Yeah, well, no, Free Basic looked pretty cool. I mean, they were showing, if you go to their website, freebasic.net, on their screenshots/downloads page, they had, like, you know, crazy stuff, like really nice games, and I believe they had a MMORPG, or I don't even know how you pronounce that, actually. I'm a morgue.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a way. But.
Yeah. Anyway, they had like an EverQuest clone. How about that? Everyone knows what the hell EverQuest is. That looked pretty spiffy. They had all kinds of stuff that I personally I would not have expected from BASIC. I mean, I remember BASIC back in the day, like when I was programming on my Super Leap 31337 DOS 5.0 machine. I remember when I thought I was pretty hot shit for hacking graphics in EGA mode. I was like, yeah,
nice.
I thought I was pretty cool. And then I look at this stuff and I'm like wow, these people know what the hell they're doing.
What's really funny is they have like OpenGL examples, OpenGL texturing, and then some ray tracing, and then a Quake 2 model viewer, and then all the way down at the bottom they have Microsoft Nibbles and Microsoft Gorillas running in XP and Debian. I mean, what's that all about?
Well, I remember Gorillas. Gorillas rocked. I liked Gorillas so much that in my second semester, this was still I was in a computer science major, my second semester C++ class, they asked us to clone a game, and I cloned Gorillas. Or they asked us to program like a project or a game or something, and I decided to clone Gorillas. It was decidedly less high tech, like I didn't have all the buildings and everything. But it was pretty cool, and the graphics sucked. It was basically two balls that lobbed other balls at each other. But, you know, hey, I got an A-minus off of it, so it was pretty good.
Not bad.
Variable
not bad.
Lead
actually,
and crazy shit.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. I wrote a clone of Nibbles back in the day, and it supported up to four players. It was pretty wild. And it was
Whoa.
VGA. It's pretty exciting. But,
yeah, I bet, like, no one knows what the hell we're talking about. I'm probably going to feel old. But yeah, go to that Free Basic thing and go look at Microsoft Gorillas and Microsoft Nibbles, which were it was like in the DOS days they had a Basic interpreter, not even a compiler. You couldn't compile it. It was called QBasic, and these two games were included with it, and they had all the source there, so you could fiddle with it if you wanted. But yeah, those were the two games, and I remember wasting more than a few days playing those stupid games. And I remember first finding them, and I thought they were, like, the best thing ever. And they were included with the operating system.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Huh.
Yeah, the days before Minesweeper.
I was never a Minesweeper fan, though, I gotta tell you.
Really? I got really good with it in high school because I took, like, my senior year, I took this course on basically it was Microsoft Office, and I could, like, plow through the assignment in, like, half the class. And I'd play Free Cell or I'd play Minesweeper. And I got pretty adept at Minesweeper.
Yep. I don't know, never got into it. I knew a Russian guy back in the day who worked for IBM, who was like one of those head-in-the-clouds type mathematician guys. Man, and he could blow through a game of Minesweeper in like 25 seconds. It was amazing.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was definitely just a computer with a body.
You gotta love meatware.
Yeah.
All right. Enough reminiscing down memory lane here. Next email is from Madar, I believe. I don't know how you pronounce that. Greetings, Strom and Black Ratchet. I guess you're Strom this evening there, not Theory.
Fine.
Yeah. Greetings, Strom and Black Ratchet. I just wanted to send you a quick note regarding the audio quality of the last two episodes, 128 and 129. The MP3 files sound fine when played on my computer. However, they suffer from a digital distortion to a level at which they are completely useless on my portable device, iRiver. I've heard this sort of distortion a bit on the past shows. However, the last two are much worse. I've tried to normalize out the files in Audacity. However, this was a losing battle. I knew this beforehand, but I tried nonetheless. It sounds like the compression issue. Perhaps you changed something in the way you encode the show. Anyway, not trying to complain here. I listened to all of them on my desktop, after all. But I thought you might want to know about this. Keep up the good work. Happy New Year to you and yours, Madar. P.S. For the record, I live in Taiwan. However, I am not actually from Taiwan. I kind of have my doubts on anyone here is listening, but hey, you never know. Madar, I will admit, for the record, 128 and 129 were very much rush jobs that I kind of plowed right through to get them ready, because everyone's been paying attention to the soap opera that is the archives over the past month or so. I usually take my time editing each show, and like I said, both these are very much rush jobs. For that, I apologize, and when I do have some free time, I will fix them in the archives. However, I got to admit, a bad show is better than no show at all.
True. So you actually do have high-quality versions of these sitting on some hard drive somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah. All of these are... I have a giant archive of all the BinRev episodes that are in the complete, like, raw format of what we actually recorded them in. And... I guess I can go and talk about what the hell we record them in. All of this is actually done via Asterisk. I think we've mentioned that before. And everything initially is in 64 kilobits per second, MuLock and Panding. What I usually do when I edit them, I try to stretch them out up to 44 kilohertz sampling and higher quality, so it's a little more than 64 kilobits. However, just to make it more compatible with all the high quality musics, like the intro music and the email theme and the exiting music, are all higher quality than 64 kilobits per second. However, on 128, 129, basically what I did is I did not convert them up. I converted everything else down, and I just sort of slapped them together onto a giant audio track. So, as for sounding like crap on your iRiver, honestly, they sound fine on my iPod. I usually normalize everything before I export to MP3, but this really shouldn't have made a difference, I don't think, because technically when you convert to MP3 anyway, it should really make a difference. The end result should sound as crappy as initially, maybe just not as high quality on the music, but...
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Who knows? I wouldn't worry about it too much. Yeah, I noticed the same thing when I was listening to it at work one day.
They do sound crap. They do sound lower quality, but not horrid, I don't think.
No, just lower enough that you would notice it, or at least I would notice it. So
yeah, well, no, I do notice it well. Well, no, normally, like, you know, the area where, like, the audio of the dialogue, or it sounds like it usually does, because it just sounds like crap, because it's, well, it doesn't sound like crap, it sounds like a telephone conversation, because we're recording it all on telephones. But I think the only difference that I noticed in 128, 129 were the fact that we just sort of used the bad audio, the lower quality for the music, so whatever. We'll fix it. Everything will be happy, and everyone will rejoice into the night or something. I don't know.
Hmm. Okay, if you say so.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Our third email tonight is from Iron Geek again. And he actually, I think he emailed this us today, if I'm not mistaken. Hi, Black Ratchet, Strom Carlson, guest and all. Okay, I know I've asked this before on a forum someplace, but I'm still trying to figure out right answers. What does an 802.11b sniffer on an 802.11g network C, network C, and vice versa, using both promiscuous mode and monitor mode? For those of you who don't understand the difference, the two modes, please read promiscuous node, and he gave a Wikipedia article, which I've tinyurl.com/deltauniformalpharomeoromeo, and the monitor mode is tinyurl.com/bravouniformmikecharliexray. Seems a lot of folks get them confused. To further complicate the matter, some cards seem to support these modes. For example, the IPW2200 supports monitor mode with the newest device drivers in Linux, but does not seem to support promiscuous modes in either Windows or Linux from what I've tried so far, at least in the distribution I'm using. Here are my questions, but in a lot more concise manner. An 802.11b sniffer on an 802.11g network, what it will see in monitor mode. 802.11b sniffer on an 802.11g network, see in promiscuous node. What will 1102.11g sniffer on an 802.11b network see in monitor mode? And what would 802.11g sniffer on an 802.11b network see in promiscuous mode? Wow, try saying that three times fast.
I don't even know the answer to the question, so yeah. I couldn't say it three times fast.
Yeah. I plan to do some more systematic tests soon and post results, but my hardware is limited, as I stated before, and lack of support with some chipsets used to complicate matters. As best as I can tell, these are so far my answers as to the 1102.11b sniffer on the 11g network. I'm not even going to bother saying the whole thing anymore. Just 802.11 management traffic, beacons and such, and broadcast stuff. 802.11b on an 802.11g network in promiscuous mode will just see broadcast traffic. 802.11g sniffer in an 11b network in monitor mode will see everything. An 11g sniffer on 11b network in promiscuous mode will see everything but 802.11 management traffic, beacons and such. Also, if anyone can recommend a good 802.11g card that will support promiscuous mode in Windows and monitor mode in Linux, I would appreciate it. I found sites to recommend good cards, but sometimes revision numbers can cause confusion as to what modes are supported. Keep up the great show. Thanks, Iron Geek. Well, okay, I'm just going to take a break after reading that. Whew, that was one hell of an email. I was kind of confused, to be honest with you. The way I always understood it was monitor mode and promiscuous mode were nearly identical. Promiscuous mode was just usually referred to in a wired situation, while monitor mode was just kind of used in a wireless situation. So I will submit this to the audience. You're probably going to have to rewind and listen to this email again because I probably butchered it horribly. Can you shed any light on the subject? Radio@binrev.com. See, have you ever heard of, like, something called, like, promiscuous mode in a wireless network?
Well, you know, I guess it depends what operating system they use. You know, they may just call it promiscuous mode in the operating system. But I heard somewhere that there was a Cisco card that had special instructions that did a special monitor mode that went above and beyond just being able to, like, monitor one channel and, like, look at all the stuff that goes across it. Like, you could monitor multiple channels at the same time. So every time I hear monitor mode, I tend to think it's something that is a little more down to the metal and lets you see more stuff that usually the card would filter out. Essentially, the card does no work, then it just lets everything come through.
Yeah, I mean, our monitor mode, which I always understood, is whether or not the card supported the RF mon patches, or
right.
I'm sorry, not the patches, but the mode. And I'm not sure
right.
if that Cisco card you're talking about was something like that, or something a little more advanced, I guess you could say. So people were talking about promiscuous mode, I just assumed that was just a sniffer on a wired network. I didn't know if there was something going on in a wireless thing. Because
mm-hmm.
basically they accomplish the same thing. They just you're looking at all the traffic, not just the stuff bound for your machine or, you know, I don't know. Well, so hopefully someone in the audience can answer this because I'm actually kind of curious. And I will admit it, I'm kind of confused. I didn't know wireless cards could be put in promiscuous mode. Lord only knows.
I have no idea, unfortunately.
No, neither do I. So that's why I sort of mumbled my way through this letter and tried to get it out of the air here so people can hopefully enlighten us and enlighten Iron Geek as well. Because now I'm just flat-out curious, and I hope I'll get at least one email for next week so I can read it on air and hopefully be enlightened.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, that sort of wraps up the email bag tonight. We're going to segue into personal hacking stories, and I think Knot Theory has all kinds of crazy personal hacking stories that he talked about, like new toys that he has gotten that he's been camping out for in the front of the Verizon store waiting for.
No, I don't have anything new. Sorry.
I don't have anything new. Oh, okay.
No, I got myself the Trio 700W. I found some interesting problems with it. Nothing that ruins the phone, but stuff that's just documented poorly so that it made me think my phone was broken. And then let me tell you, the people at the Verizon store, they looked at my phone for 1 second, they're like, we don't support this. I'm like, how did you not support it? What are you talking about? But apparently with a phone like this, you need to call Verizon's special data support people. So
really?
I spent time on the phone with them. Yeah. It's not really just this phone. And here's where it gets really bizarre. The guy told me any phone that hooks up to your laptop that can be used as a modem, you have to call Verizon data support. Well, the funny thing about that is that this phone specifically can't do that.
Oh, really? It can't?
It can't. Well, here's the thing. People said Verizon disabled it so that they could force you to buy an EVDO card separate from this at an EVDO plan. But then Verizon came out with a press release and said possibly in the next couple of months they're going to have an extra piece of software that you can get that will let you do it. Which I think is really strange because I'm pretty sure Windows Mobile 5 has it built in. So it's like they built it in and then they disabled it, and now they're building it back in. So whatever. So the guy had no idea what he was talking about. He was told me to call the data people. And then the data people, in their infinite wisdom, they told me that the only thing I could do was soft reset the device, reinstall all the drivers on my computer and see if it worked, and if that didn't work, they would tell me how to hard reset the device and lose all of my data.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I think we kind of got ahead of ourselves here. What was the bug that you found out?
Well, it's not really a bug. Verizon
What was causing this problem in the first place? How about that?
Okay. Let me explain a couple of things. First of all, with any type of pocket PC or smartphone device, or Pocket PC phone edition like this one, you can use ActiveSync to sync your phone with your Outlook contacts and your Outlook email and your Outlook calendar and all that other kind of crap. Which, you know, to me sounded gimmicky and stupid at first because I don't use Outlook, but now that I've used it, it's actually kind of cool. It does not work with Outlook Express, however. If you have Outlook Express, the phone just sits there with a dumb look on its face.
That's a problem in ActiveSync. I don't think ActiveSync supports Outlook, period. Outlook Express.
Right.
It supports Outlook.
Right.
What version of Outlook are we talking about here? Because I
have Outlook 2002. That's what came with it. But they give you ActiveSync and Outlook 2002.
Oh, okay.
And let me tell you, first of all, Outlook 2002 looks like it was made in 1970. It is so dated. I don't know what these guys were thinking when they came up with it. Did it really come out in 2002? Or is
really?
No,
2000, it came out in 2002. But really, the interface hadn't changed. Well, okay, the interface definitely hadn't changed since 2000. And really, it hadn't changed since about 97. Outlook 97, besides like some GWAS features, has not really changed until Outlook, whatever, Outlook 13. I don't even know what the heck they call it. Outlook...
2003?
2003, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it really does have, in all honesty, not 1970, but it has like a 1998 feel to me. So,
mm-hmm.
1997 is about the last time it changed, and that makes sense. So, okay, so I hook my Trio up to ActiveSync, and it's all great and everything, and all my emails synced, and I'm happy. But I wanted to use Verizon's what they call wireless sync, which is basically pretty scary. You give Verizon either your POP3 account information or your IMAP account information, and they'll pull your account and push your email to your phone, which... Well, the funny thing about it is it's not really push, because Verizon pulls your email account and the phone pulls Verizon. So I don't know why they call it push, but it's definitely not push. But in any case, it does it in the background, and it's fairly convenient. But the nice thing about it is I don't need to have my mail server set up in any type of fashion so that it can accept email from me, like with a password or anything like that. I use their email server,
mm-hmm.
And there's no configuration. Basically, I give it my phone number and my password, and it connects to my Verizon Wireless Sync account and has all that information, whatever, which also gives me a nice interface where if my IMAP account didn't have webmail, I can use Verizon's webpage to do my webmail, and I can update my contacts and my calendar and all that stuff through there, and then my phone will sync to it automatically. It's kind of neat, but one thing that's a little weird, and maybe I misread it, which I will always leave that as a possibility because I blow through things because I'm pretty sure that every message that pops up on a computer screen is completely irrelevant unless it's exactly the information I'm looking for. So it's either next, okay, cancel, whatever, get the hell out of the way. I need to get my email. So I plug my phone, after I do the wireless sync, I plug my phone into my laptop, and the phone comes up with a little box, and it says something about using ActiveSync while you have wireless sync enabled may corrupt your contacts because your email may be overlapping on your machines and whatever. So would you like to disable ActiveSync? And then I could have sworn that in parentheses it said that I'll still be able to copy files to and from the phone and install applications. Because otherwise I wouldn't have wanted to disable it. So it disables it, and it works that one time, and I move some files back and forth. And then every time after that, like a couple days later, when I tried to use it, it didn't work, and I had forgotten about this stupid screen that popped up. So I'm trying to sync, and it keeps giving me an error message about how my COM port on my PC is unavailable. Okay. And I had actually just installed some really weird COM port monitoring software for some piece of hardware I was playing around with to try to reverse engineer it. But that's a totally other story. So I figured, okay, maybe I'll uninstall that. So I uninstall that, and then my laptop won't boot anymore, which was a disaster in itself. Finally, after fixing all of that crap, I go through all the options of all these programs, and I realize I have to turn ActiveSync back on and just tell it to not sync my contacts, which, in my mind, it should have said, okay, if you're using wireless sync, I won't sync your contacts, I won't sync your calendar, and I won't sync your email, but I'll still keep the file thing going because it can just uncheck those. But that's not what it does. And it actually, what Verizon's wireless sync does in order to stop you from using ActiveSync is it kind of behind the scenes, you'll see when you connect the cable that it's connecting to ActiveSync, but then it just doesn't work. I don't know if it, like, does some internal denial of service attack, so it's just broken or what. But I would think in the ActiveSync software, they would have, like, a little message there that says, hey, if you're using Verizon Wireless Sync, ActiveSync may not work because you've disabled it through there. But it doesn't say that. So, in any case, I re-enabled it, and I disabled those couple of options, and now ActiveSync works and wireless sync works, and it's pretty cool. I can email from my phone. I can install all kinds of applications, Pocket Streets, Pocket Putty, Pocket Everything, and it's a lot of fun. A couple of times the phone has definitely frozen up on me, usually when I'm trying to use Skype or Agile Messenger. This is the messaging client that I mess around with, and they're both beta, so they're known to take the phone down and pretty much everything with it. So I have to pop back open and yank the battery out. But I uninstalled both of the applications, and I haven't had any problems with the phone freezing. So all in all, it's pretty stable. Avoid anything that says beta because it's going to crash your phone.
So wait, there's a pocket there's a Skype Pocket PC.
Oh my God, you are gonna love this. Okay. I don't have a Wi-Fi card for this. I just have EVDO support, and there's a Skype client, and I can actually use Skype over EVDO, and it works.
Oh, you suck.
Oh yeah, it's really cool.
So well, yeah, but Skype doesn't like support any protocols. Like you can't hook it into your Astros box, can you?
I looked and I looked and I looked, and there's guys reverse engineering the protocol, but no luck. I really want somebody, and that somebody is not going to be me because I have, you know, I have too many projects on my plate already that aren't getting done. That would be sorry, I just I had an outdated website caught in my throat. that project would be to port IRX.com to Pocket PC. If somebody is going to do that, I will send them money. You have my word. I'll send you $50. Just do it, please. Somebody else toss $50 in the pot. Just get it done. Because that would be awesome. If I could use my Astros box from my phone, I would be in heaven.
So, well, the problem is that it's all crappy SIP clients, and even the SIP clients on Pocket PC suck. I mean, when I bought my Pocket PC, I was like, oh man, what I'll do is I'll get a Bluetooth headset, and I'll go be, you know, super cool, and I'll be able to use my Astros box from my Pocket PC, and I can use my headset, and I can use it as a phone if I have a Wi-Fi connection, because it has, you know, built-in Wi-Fi, and has built-in Bluetooth. And unfortunately, all the SIP clients suck on Pocket PC. I always say SJ Phone, because SJ Phone sucks the least, but when it boils down, they all suck.
Yeah. Well, an IIX client, you couldn't really mess that up too bad.
Well, I mean, even on XCOM, that sucks on the software. There's no such thing as a decent software phone.
But you know what? There's a difference. Like, I can understand how IXCOM is not elegant. It's not great looking. It's not really slick to use. But it works. That's what I care about. And then once somebody's got a version of this that works, then they can clean it up and make it look pretty.
Yeah,
but
true.
I just want the bare bones. Whatever is going to get the job done, that's what I care about.
Well, it's the difference between eating ground chuck and filet mignon. I mean, you'll eat the ground chuck if it's possible, but you'd rather be eating filet mignon.
Right.
I mean, I'm not bad mouthing either. Technically, I'm bad mouthing SJ Phone. SJ Phone just kind of sucks. But I'm not bad mouthing XCOM. XCOM it works. It's fully functional. And I believe I have that installed on all my, you know, I have it installed on my laptop and my desktop, and if I ever wanted a soft phone, that's what I use. But, however, it just flat out, it's very bare bones. It works, and it does it very well. Unfortunately, that's about it.
Yeah, well, that's what I like about it. It's very minimalist. I don't have to worry about, you know, Harry Potter ads, like, jumping out of the sidebars and stuff, like, it just does what it's supposed to do, and it just gets out of the way. And it's very, very light on resources, from what I've seen.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know. I just like something
that's connected.
I don't know. I just the interface, in my opinion, is a little bit clunky, and it could have been designed better. But that's about it.
Right. Hey, maybe they can get theme support for it, and then fix all that.
Dude, that'd be.
And then you can have
theme support. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you can have like a Dragon Ball Z XCOM. Where, like, you, as you're dialing, like, the guy's, like, throwing fireballs at you or something. I don't know.
Well, no. The problem with the Dragon Ball Z XCOM, it would take, like, you know, like 2 days to actually get it started up while it's powering up in the background. Wow, actually, I made a Dragon Ball Z joke on the show. That's tough.
Yeah, somehow I managed to start it. That's strange.
Yeah.
I don't even really know what Dragon Ball Z is. No, I know that it's some, like, Japanese cartoon thing, because a friend of mine has a couple of the books in, well, I guess it's Japanese, I don't know, in, you know, whatever language it's in, and I took them off the shelf. I was like, what in the Lord's name is this? And sure enough, this kid was reading Dragon Ball Z in Japanese.
Dude, don't knock the anime. The anime rocks. But the one of the interesting things that I always found about Dragon Ball Z is that right before they go into a fight, it takes, like, you know, 2 or 3 episodes for them just to, like, trash talk and power up before they actually fight, and it's just amazing. which is why I sort of made the joke of the whole taking it 2 days to actually getting it started there.
Cool, I did not know that.
Yeah, well, now you do, and knowing's half the battle.
No, I think that's as far as it goes for me with Dragon Ball Z. That's it, I know, game over.
So okay, so you got your 700W. Do you recommend the phone? Because I know a couple of people have been asking about it in the IRC channel.
That's obvious. Obviously, I'm not recommending it right away. I gotta think about it a bit. I don't think it's a bad phone. There are things that it's missing that I wish it had, and now I really wish they had it. I wish it had Wi-Fi, but it doesn't.
That'd be sweet.
Right, but they. You know, I found out that SanDisk makes a 256 megabyte SD card with Wi-Fi. So I thought, great. You know what? Eventually, maybe they'll make a half gig one, or a 1 gig one, or a 2 gig one, whatever, with Wi-Fi. And then that's what I would want to get. Well, it turns out one of my friends is getting the phone. He's actually getting it for free because he did some work for Palm. How nice is that?
Wow.
Yeah. So. He's getting the phone for free, and he's been looking around to see if he can get Wi-Fi for it also. And it turns out that everybody on the forums, on every forum he can find all over the net, is saying that SanDisk has discontinued the 256 megabyte card with Wi-Fi. So,
wow.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty much the dumbest thing they could have ever done. But
that's harsh.
Yeah. Although apparently SanDisk is doing some crazy stuff. Have you seen? They have an SD card that you don't need a reader for, like if you want to use it in your laptop, you take the SD card and you fold it in half, and it plops right into your USB port.
For an SD card?
Yeah.
Whoa, what the?
Yeah.
How the hell do you
do
that?
I have no idea. I wanted to see an animation or a PDF that had it like blown up or something like that. If you go to SanDisk's webpage, it's like the Ultra SD 2 Plus, I think, is what it's called.
Boy, some marketing guru sort of blew a load on that one. Dude, we'll call it the Ultra SD 2 Plus.
Yeah. They just kept adding stuff on and adding stuff on. Because they had the SD and then the SD 2, and then the Ultra SD 2 was like the faster version, and now it's Plus because, like I said, it says right on their page, it says folds in half and goes directly into your USB drive without a reader. Or your USB port.
What the hell are they going to call the next one? The Ultra SD 2 Plus?
Plus, or mm-hmm. Times, or Integral, maybe? I don't know.
Integral.
They have all kinds of math things.
The function of the SD card.
Yeah. I don't know. So that's pretty crazy. But anyway, back to what I was saying. So unless some other company makes a memory card with Wi-Fi, I'm going to be really disappointed because the phone has like 64 megabytes on it. Well, I think 48 megs are free. And 48 megs, you can put a lot of stuff in that if you're not putting like music and crap. But, you know, I want to have a little more storage than that if I can get serious about this phone. So that'll be a real bummer.
Not if theory wants his pocket porn.
Yeah, exactly. MPEG 4, whatever format I can get. I want to be able to have the best of both worlds, Wi-Fi and storage. And the funny thing about it is, honestly, where I go, there's EVDO support everywhere. So I don't really need Wi-Fi because Wi-Fi is great if I'm sitting in like one spot and I know I'm going to have constant internet access. But with EVDO, I can just drive around and have continuous EVDO coverage all over the whole county that I live in, almost.
Yeah. Well, actually, I keep on meaning to read his email. Red Nerd, one of my friends, he got an EVDO card. Well, technically his boss got an EVDO card, and he decided to beta test it for him. And he lives in like backwoods New Hampshire. I mean, he has like a Trio 650, I believe, and it barely gets a signal. But he actually took the EVDO card to his house, and it got a moderate signal, and he was, like, pulling down, like, 144K a second on it. And I could be getting these numbers wrong, but he was pulling down a sizable amount of data on it, like, pretty zippy. So, Red Nerd, you know, shouts, thanks for that email. And he showed me, like, screenshots, and it was actually kind of odd because he was using Verizon's client on a Mac, and it just looked very strange.
Wow, that's really weird.
Yeah. But yeah, EVDO works in all kinds of crazy places, and it, he says it doesn't work half bad. The speed is pretty good, but there's a notable lag in the latency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, I used Skype, but I only did the test call, where it says, "Hey, welcome to Skype." Blah blah blah. After the tone, you have 10 seconds to say something, and it'll be played back to you. So, you know, I played the tone, and I said, "OMG, spoo, BBQ hacks, whatever." And it came back, and it was clear. Like, it definitely didn't sound like a robot. It wasn't LTC-10. So I was impressed. But I don't know anybody else that has Skype, which might sound stupid because there's, like, 8 million users or whatever of Skype. But nobody that I talk to on a regular basis uses it. So
call Bernie S. or whatever it is. Yeah, everyone's going to be at least think Skype is a new technology just for the you're off the hook, listeners. So we're
no,
just
I think it's new. It just came out.
Brand spanking new. Boy, we're just gonna start like ragging on off the hook here if we start going down this path. My personal favorite, two weeks ago, Emmanuel said they were talking about the Phone One phones. For those of you who don't know, those are they're showing up with the phones with the yellow handsets. And they were talking about how Phone One sort of filled the void because AT&T just stopped carrying coin calls long distance. Now, AT&T hasn't carried coin calls long distance since 2002. So when I heard that, I really cringed. I was like, man, what the hell?
I must have missed that.
Was it last week or was it the week before?
No, I know the episode where they were talking about Phone One, but I don't remember, like, him saying those exact words. I remember him saying that something about it, but
he did say that, and I stopped it and I played it back, and he did say it, and I just sort of was like, dear God. But anyway, well, let's actually there was sort of a lukewarm recommendation for the 700W.
Yeah, I guess my stance is still that if you can get an SD card that has enough memory that makes, or you can get the 256 megabyte Wi-Fi SD card will make you happy. If that's all the storage you're going to need, then I would wholeheartedly recommend this phone. Otherwise, if you want Wi-Fi, and again, if you have good EVDO coverage, Wi-Fi doesn't really matter unless you need to get on your local Wi-Fi and connect to your LAN and connect to machines on your LAN that aren't on the internet. If you need to do that, it's a problem. But if you don't need to do that and you've got good coverage, then I would recommend the phone. It is a little pricey, and if you're hurting for cash, I'd say maybe hold off for a couple of months, see if the price comes down. But I got to tell you, I got a pretty decent plan. Like my old T-Mobile plan was way over $100 a month, and my new plan is $80 a month with 1,350 minutes and Verizon Wireless broadband EVDO support. So,
not
a bad deal. Because I have friends that have fewer minutes that are also paying $80 with Verizon. But this is like a Trio 700 promotional plan.
Huh.
So,
we should do studios so they could Skype out and just Skype everything.
I thought about it.
It's unlimited
really,
data, I assume, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
They call it Verizon Wireless Broadband, which for some reason just the name bothers me. It's definitely unlimited with this plan. I think there are plans that maybe do not have unlimited, but this has it. And it's pretty cool, you know. What's that?
You'd be insane if you got an unlimited data account, unless you're like really stupid and hardly use it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I use it a lot. I browse a lot of web pages with it. I've pulled down tons and tons and tons of data. I did try streaming over it off of MSN's webpage, and it worked. You know, I could watch video on it. It's not great, but, you know, it's on a phone with, like, a 240 by 240 screen. It's about as good as it's going to get.
Crap. I wonder if, like, Verizon has, like, demonstration models on their store. I doubt it. Probably won't let you play with it.
No, they don't. When I showed up, the store opened at 8:30. Me, like the typical early adopter loser, I showed up at 8:45, and I said, I want the Trio 700 right now. So the guy was like, I said, can I check one out? He said, absolutely not. He said, there's no way that we're going to put one of these phones out for a bunch of people to come into the store and break.
God damn it.
Yeah. Well,
thank you,
again,
everyone else, for ruining my fun.
Yeah, well, you know, I live, the place that I went to is a pretty snotty area, so they,
Well, I mean, probably, even when you go, like, I go into, like, T-Mobile stores now, and, like, all the phones are just, like, you know, mock-ups. I'm like, I wanted to play with the Sidekick, too, before I got it, and we will just bite your tongue. And, like, the phone they gave you is just, like, this plastic mock-up with no internals, and I was like, what the heck? I want to play with it. I want to find out what it feels like. To get a tactile feel, see what the speed's like. No, can't do that. Blah, 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 blah. Whatever.
Yeah, I remember going to the T-Mobile store and being really excited to check out a couple of phones, and I was like, oh, look, it's totally not real at all. The screen is plastic and says AOL Instant Messenger on it, and it weighs about an ounce.
Yeah.
That's kind of... Why do they do that?
All right, my final question for you about your phone, my God, we've been sort of going on this for a while, is what, how many phones does this actually, in the past year, how many phones have you gone through?
Let's think. At DEF CON, I had the Sidekick 2. That didn't last very long. I'm trying to think of the phone I had before that, but I can't really remember what it was. Oh, it was a Nextel. Okay. So last year, 2005, I had a Nextel i730, a T-Mobile Sidekick 2, a Sony Ericsson P910, a Qtech 8010, and now, well, that's not this year, but now I have this phone. So I had four phones last year, actually five, because I bought a phone as a demo for something for a customer.
You're crazy.
They paid me for it, so it didn't matter.
You're still crazy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Trust me. My girlfriend thinks it's ridiculous that I keep buying phone after phone after phone. And I say, you know what? Every time I get a phone, I'm like, baby, this is the last one I'm going to buy, and it never is. So this one by far was the most expensive, so I really intend on keeping this for a long time. And the reason why I switched phones so many times is I thought that the i730 would be a great platform to develop on because it had GPS and J2ME and it was easy. But it turned out that Nextel just messed up so many things. They messed up my bill all the time. I didn't want to deal with it anymore. Then I get Sidekick 2, and we all know how I feel about that. So then I switched to the Sony Ericsson P910, which people told me with Symbian was easy to program, but it turned out that was also a hassle. So then I got a Qtech 8010, which was a Windows Mobile phone, but it was Windows Mobile 2003. It was missing some nice stuff that I wanted, and it was a cheap phone anyway, so I didn't feel too bad about it. And basically, it just held me over until I could get this phone, which now has fast wireless access, Windows Mobile 5.0. It's pretty much all I can ask for, with the exception of no Wi-Fi, no built-in GPS. But these are things I'll have to get over.
All right.
So that's the history of my phones for last year.
Yeah, boy, this was. I think we should just turn this into the Not Theory phone episode.
Oh God, I could go on for a long time about phones.
I'm really good. Yeah,
we have other topics.
Yeah, we have other topics. And I'll just sort of blow through my personal hack stories. Friday, Verizon not only just had to send out one tech, but two techs to find out what the hell was wrong with my phones. I had the case of the disappearing wire pair, and they found it. You know, I'd like to send out shouts out to who was it, Matt and Kevin. I finally have phone. I have DSL. I finally feel like a real person again. I can actually talk to you via VoIP and record the show, so you don't have to deal with me in GSM.
Cool.
And then that's it. Yeah, it was a painful enough experience that I want to, like, you know, wait a little bit before I start talking about it again. But it all worked out for the best, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go into the specific show topic. We're not just going to talk about Not Theory cell phones.
No. I actually have one more phone-related question that I don't know the answer to that you probably do. Maybe I'm a total noob when it comes to this, but GSM phones use, you know,
yep,
GSM, you know, GSM modulation, and they have the GSM codec, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a CDMA phone, what codec do they use?
To be honest, I don't know. I believe it could be something called a CDMA codec, but Tell you what, we'll pose this one to the audience, and we'll go wait on that. I'm sure Strom would know this.
Because I want to know the technical specifications between the CDMA and GSM as it you know, refers to the voice quality. Because I've noticed that on Verizon, the voice quality is a million times better than my GSM phone.
CDMA and voice quality is better than GSM, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, it was when I had Sprint, and it was... Sprint was better than iDEN and GSM, and Verizon's the same way. So,
yeah,
I'm curious. Anyway.
All right. Our show topic this evening, our very belated show topic, it's going to be about the wonderful world of ham radio, or amateur radio, if you were. So, the reason why we have Not Theory on tonight is that him and I are both amateur radio license holders. We are duly certified by the feds to... hack radio.
Oh yeah, my call sign is Z4OMG.
Oh man, that'd be great to get, like, you know, N1OMG or something.
That would be cool. I never thought about that.
I'm about to look that up.
Oh man, you know what? I don't want people to go around owning this guy, but I think the coolest ham call sign ever is N4TAS. That's just the cool.
That'd be great.
Yeah, man. But it really does exist, and please don't bother this guy because he's probably really cool.
No, if you want to bother people, we typically I had the show topic picked out last week, and then all of a sudden on Off the Hook last week, before I listened to the episode, I had the show topic picked out. Then on Off the Hook, they started talking about ham radio. I was like, God damn it! I got scooped by Off the Hook. But,
yep.
You know, what you going to do? They gave all their ham radio.
They're better than us.
Yeah, they're cool. They're Cooper K-Red. They actually gave all their ham radio call signs, which I found amazing, because basically if you give your ham radio call sign out, you're going to get owned very easily, because it's all traceable back to you. We'll get into that later. So, basically, let's sort of start with a nice little overview here. And amateur radio, by definition, is basically it's a license to mess around. Back in the days, I've referred to hams, which is sort of ham radio is sort of a nickname for amateur radio. No one really knows where the term came from, but it's very much into the vernacular. Ham radio guys are basically the guinea pigs of radios. Everyone else, we all just sort of mess around with all the stuff that before the commercial world doesn't know about, doesn't have the research budget, or, you know, really doesn't care about first. I mean, I was doing, like, wireless data before, you know, all this, like, you know, crazy, like, you know, EVVO, or hell, even, like, wireless LAN before all that stuff came out. You know, Nextel were like, you know, big of, like, you know, do your whole GPS tracking thing on your cell phone. I was like, I've been doing that since 1997. What the hell's up with that? You know, satellite communication, microwave, all that stuff. You know, ham radio all pioneered that. You know, I'll say right on they said it on Off the Hook, you know, hacking and amateur radio get along in very well in some areas. However, what they didn't tell you is that there are a lot of caveats to that. I picked this one off of Wikipedia. As of 2004, there were 3 million amateur radio operators worldwide, which about 700,000 in the United States, 600,000 in Japan, and 140,000 each in South Korea and Thailand, which I was shocked about Japan. I had no clue. I guess all those crazy, like, you know, Sony guys over there are like amateur radio guys. Lord only knows. We'll do a little. But ham radio is big into history because they like their roots and everything, which is something more or less the modern day hacking movement does, you know, has to an extent, but really not. In popular legend, Marconi invented radio. There's always some debate about this, but that's Marconi is the more officially recognized person. Right after, like, 1900, 1908, like, people really started messing about with radio. And, you know, people used to, like, sit in their basements with their little transmitters and tap in Morse code and try to contact each other. After the Titanic sunk, everyone just sort of went, okay, it looks like we need to regulate this because radio played a big part in this whole rescuing of this, or attempted rescue of the ship. The Congress in 1912 passed the something called the Radio Act, which restricted private stations to certain frequencies and put regulations on them. And the frequencies that they gave them were very much like sort of the scrap ends of everything. And everyone just, like, all the hobbyists, like, drop as much as, but like, 88%. Or, like, oh, close to 90 it really was. I've seen 90% a lot. Maybe they're just rounding up. And so, you know, leave it to Congress to ruin a good time. Oops. 1928, after World War One, and everything just sort of got settled out, because World War One, you couldn't use your radio for amateur purposes anyway. There was a conference held in Washington, D.C., and that basically set up most of what amateur radio is today. I mean, they set up a lot of frequency space that were that are still in use today, actually. And they signed a lot of, like, you know, crazy international treaties about, you know, how to use radio and what people should do and, you know, call signs and all that stuff. World War II, they stopped again, and no one could actually experiment because I guess it kind of makes sense, but I always thought it was kind of stupid. I guess they don't want people to, you know, contact the Nazis and work stations in Germany or something. Basically, from about post-World War II all the way up until, you know, early 2000s, still about almost 2003, you know, the radio, there were some slight changes in the entire amateur radio and everything, how everything was set up and how everything worked. But for the most part, everything, you know, stayed the same up until about 2003, because 2003, the World Radio Conference met in Switzerland, and what they did is they repealed a major requirement for a lot of amateur radio enthusiasts, because what previously the all the international treaties said to operate on the world bands, which are, you know, radio bands where you can talk internationally, you had to learn Morse code, and you had to, like, you know, do such and such a rate of, like, 5 words a minute. And they actually repealed that. And while that actually hasn't affected us yet in the United States, which hopefully it will change soon, it actually was a very momentous requirement, because up until then you had to learn Morse code if you want to talk on the world band. But everyone decided, no one's using Morse code anymore, so let's go stop about that. And that basically, you know, takes us up to today, and I gotta ask you right now. I think everyone's sort of tuned off and are falling asleep with their headsets on.
No, I'm still here.
Yeah, you're still here. Oh, that's good. I was talking about the other people though. All the listeners are, like, you know, driving along on the radio and listening to the history of amateur radio and are almost like falling off the road if they're driving.
Yeah, well, you know, the history of amateur radio is cool, but I think honestly, where it's gotten recently, and I don't know if it's the if it's all this licensing stuff that's changed, has gotten it there. But I think, you know, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on in amateur radio. I got into it in, like, 1994, and I don't know, it was exciting for a little while, but I kind of dropped off, and guys are starting to do cool things with software radios and all kinds of stuff like that. So now I'm into it again. So
yeah, we'll have to talk about your software radio some other episode, but that's pretty cool. You have to
maybe we'll
make that the site of the week or something. Okay, well, when people talk about ham radio or amateur radio, what a lot of people think is, like, you know, a bunch of old, fat, bearded, suspended guys who sit in their room and they have radio stacked up to the ceiling, and they all, like, have knobs and lights on them, and they all fiddle with them, and you can't touch anything. And basically all they do all day is they just try to talk to, like, some far-off country that they're hearing on some scratchy radio band.
And that's 100% accurate.
Yeah, it is. There are people like that. Well, I mean, it's not 100%. It is accurate, but also I like doing that. I like the whole sitting down there and try to talk off to far-off countries. But, you know, there are people like that, but at the same time, there are computer geeks, you know, computer hackers, if you want us to call them, who, you know, just have, you know, that lives in, you know, it's the same way that, like, there's computer geeks out there that are, you know, live in their mom's basement and they watch Star Trek all day and, you know, eat pizza and don't ever come out into the sunlight. I mean, it's the same stereotype. It's not always correct, but yes, there are people who are like that. But amateur radio is a lot more than that. Well, first off, and let's go check in the show notes here. First off, let's go talk about licensing. The major difference between amateur radio and, let's say, CB or Family Radio Service or GMRS or all those other, you know, maritime, all the other radio services that you have to, there is a test you have to pass. There is a written test with little number two pencils, and you got to fill in the bubbles. And depending on what you actually license you want to go for, you have to pass a Morse code test currently. That might change soon. Don't get all scared. It's easier than it sounds. It's, you know, it's not this horrible thing. It's not like the SATs. There are three levels of licensing. There's technician class, which allows you to operate on any band above 30 megahertz. And to get that, you have to pass a 35-question written test. Then there's general class, which allows you to operate on all the technician class frequencies plus some world band frequencies. And that's another 35-question test, along with a 5-word-per-minute test. Finally, there's extra class, which is the highest, most class license you can hold for amateur radio, and that's a 50-question test with a 5-word-per-minute Morse code test. Technically, if you passed a 5-word-per-minute test with your general class, you don't need to take it again for extra. Now, these tests, I mean, they sound intimidating and everything, but they just make sure that the hard part for me was knowing basic electronic theory. Like, you need to know that, you know, volts is equal to, God, I'm gonna like fail it right now.
Volts equals current times resistance.
Yes, that's it. There we go. That's one of the things you need to know. Thank you, not theory.
Not a problem. But they have the way that they told me to learn it was Ohm's magic circle. If you Google Ohm's magic circle, you'll find
out. I remember that from my electronics course. Yeah. And, like, you need to, like, know how to read a schematic, like, you know, need, like, the crooked line represents a resistor, and the round wavy line represents an iron transformer, so I don't know what the hell all this stuff is.
Yeah, an inductor or whatever.
Inductor, that's it. An iron wound inductor, thank you. And it's simple stuff like that, and it basically, you learn it, and you completely forget it as much as I have demonstrated. The other thing that is a little more handy that you need to know, like, and you've actually probably used more, you need to know, like, I refer to them as the rules of the road. Like, you know, you can only operate between X and Y megahertz, and you can only use, like, you know, X amount of wattage in this mode. And it's stupid stuff, but it's a lot like your driver's test. If you can pass your driver's test and your written exam, it's fine. In order to qualify for each step, like, for example, if you're going for your general class, you need to pass both the technician class and the general class. So you need to answer the 35-question technician exam plus the 35-question general exam plus the 5 words per minute course, Morse code. For extra, you need to operate, you need to do 50, 35, and 35, and the 5 words per minute Morse code test. So if you really want to, and I know people that have done this, you can, you know, do 2 whacks at once. To pass the test, you need. Yeah, I know. I've known people that done it, and they're like, I was like, man, you're just.
Actually, I know somebody who did it went back when they had novice, tech, tech plus, general, advanced, and extra. They did the whole thing in one day.
Wow, that's.
Yeah.
I told you it was hardcore.
Yeah. But you only need to pass one of. Back in the day, they had 5, 13, and 20 words per minute Morse code, which 20 words per minute Morse code is insane. But you only had to pass one of those. Like, you didn't have to pass 5 and then 13 and 20. You could just pass 20 and you were set.
Yeah. Yeah, if you got 20, it cleared you off the 5 and 13 because they figure you knew you could read. If you could read at 20, you could read at 5.
Yeah, exactly.
To pass, you need to only get 70% right on your written exam. To pass a Morse code test, I think it's like you need to listen to a 5-minute conversation. And then they ask you 10 questions about what was discussed in the conversation. And I think the 70% passes there, too. Study materials are very easy to get. There's a group called the W5YI group, and that's another call sign, just for you know. I'm going to highly recommend a lot of their stuff. They helped me pass all my tests. You can also get them at the Radio Shack, I believe. But the W5YI group catalog page is at tinyurl.com/Bravo Oscar Juliet 4 Hotel. I recommend a lot of their books. Like, they have like how to get your general exam, how to get your general class license, or how to get your technician class license. And basically, there's this like they're about 100-page books, and they basically have all of the questions you could possibly be answered. Because the way the tests work is you have like, you know, about 250 question pool, and they pick randomly off that pool of the questions you can get into your actual test. And you know, if you learn all of the or get a good feel of what the questions are, you can pass it easily. Like, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah, definitely. When I was looking into getting my license, I got the Gordon West books. I don't know if he's still doing all that,
but they had
sample tests on there.
Yeah,
and the questions were almost exactly the same. So
yeah, it's amazing, and like a lot of it's just like it's phrased differently. I really can't even like you know give you a good example on that, but just it's the same question, and you just have to if you know the answer, you it's like two or three questions that are basically the same of content, and if you can pass one of them, you can pass all three. So it sounds intimidating, but it really isn't. I mean, when I started first studying for my technician, this was back in 1995 before there were just three classes, and like not theory said before there were like five. And for your technician class, what you had to do is you had to study for something called a novice test, and then you had to get your technician class. And I picked up the novice book and the technician book. I studied for both of them, and I think it was about a month. And I passed the novice test with flying colors on my first try. And I kind of rushed through the technician portion on my when I was studying because I dedicated a lot of time for novice, and I just kind of flubbed through technician. And the first time, I failed. And then I just tried it again, and I passed. And back in the day, it used to cost like $5 for each exam because they just want to cover all the paperwork. It's an honest cost. I'm not sure how much it costs now, but I just figure it's somewhere. It's pretty low. You'll have to pay some money for it, but it's just to cover your paperwork because it is the government. What do you expect? And it's Morse code. Week of summer vacation, I bought the tapes and I learned it, but I never really took the test, and I just never actually got off my ass and did it. And currently it's just, you know, languishing in my brain. It doesn't really matter. I currently half-acidly studying for my general test. Lord only knows when I'm going to pass that, though. Okay, so after you pass your test, the next step is, of course, to get a radio so you can actually, you know, use it. A no-frills handheld radio for VHF. We're assuming here that you're just going for your no-code technician license. And that will get on 2 meters, which is the most common band today. A lot of people use it, and it's for short-range FM communication. You can get a no-frills handheld radio for $200, you know, $150 if you look for one on sale. You can find a lot of dealers out there. If you just pick up an issue, there's a couple of magazines. One of them is called QST, and the other one is called Popular Communications. You can find dealers galore in there. QST is much more geared toward amateur radio. Popular Communications is geared toward radio in general. I used to use, just to talk about radios here, I used to use an HTX-202 from Radio Shack, which was very much a solid, no-frills radio. It just worked. After 5, 6, 7 years, I ran out and I bought a Kenwood's THD-7 off eBay, which is about as frilly as you can get. It has all kinds of bells and whistles and, you know, little things, and it beeps at you, and it has a built-in, you know, data mode. Yeah, that cost about $350. I forget how much I paid for it. Yeah, but $350 is pretty good. What do you have for a radio?
I started out with a Kenwood TH-78A. I don't even think they make it anymore. But it was a dual band, 2 meter 440 radio. It supported a couple of neat things. Had cross band repeat, so you could, you know, if one of your buddies had a 2 meter radio, he could transmit through your radio onto 440. It was pretty cool, but not very solidly built. So after a couple of years, it just kind of fell apart, unfortunately.
Well, I gotta say the Radio Shack it didn't have a lot of features, but you could beat the crap out of that. My God,
yeah.
I took that on camping trips. I took that everywhere I went for like, you know, good 2 or 3 years of my life, and it performed admirably.
Yeah, actually the HTX 202 is what you said you had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I the guy who got me into ham radio, he told me at the time to buy one of those, and I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought, oh, Radio Shack, it's got to be garbage. But honestly, we played around with one, and it's got really good, receive and transmit. It doesn't get, you can't modify it to go out of band, but it sounded really good.
No,
the battery life was great, and it was a neat little radio. Like I said, no mods, but if you're just starting out, you know, you don't really need to modify your radio.
No, it's set up great for me. After you get your radio, I'm just going to get on my little soapbox here. Hold on. There we go. There's a group out there called the American Radio Relay League. It's a national, basically it's a national lobbying organization for hams. They're also referred to as the ARRL. They're a national organization, and they really lobby the hell out of Washington for the hobby. They basically, if it wasn't for the ARRL, we'd definitely be set back more than a few years. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the hobby would not be what it is today. They basically allow us to continue to use the frequency space that we do. Just go ahead, buy a membership from them. It's like, if you're a student, it's like, I think it's like $5, $10. I think adults like $35. I don't know, I can't remember. I have them automatically deducted from my credit card every year, so that's it. You know, just go
and get their handbook.
I think you get the handbook free if you're. I still have my copy someplace.
Yeah, well, they updated a lot. I didn't think they did, but year to year, I've checked out a couple different revisions, and man, it changes a lot.
Yeah,
like,
I've heard
when
that.
When I got it, it was, you know, it didn't have fancy crap like self radio and all that nonsense in it, but now it's got all of that stuff. So it's not just some book written by old timers about, you know, the way things used to be. Like some hobbies they stagnate. But these guys, man, they are up to the day.
They're on the ball
with the latest greatest stuff. So it's definitely worth your money.
Yeah. And since we're actually talking about clubs, just the ARRL actually has a list of local clubs. They're basically just, you know, user groups, essentially. They all talk about ham radio, and they have, like, presentations every month. And there's people out there. They're usually friendly. There's always the old coots that, you know, get the hell off my lawn. But they're very friendly. I was very active back in the day of my local club in the North Shore of Massachusetts. And people are there more than willing to help you mess about and learn. So, you know, we're sort of lobbying the hell out of amateur radio. Let's talk. I think more people are interested. What the hell can you do with this damn thing? We just made a list up here. I just sort of picked this out of random. This is just stuff that I know. Ever want to talk to a satellite? You can do that with amateur radio. There's stuff you can actually talk to the International Space Station. There's an amateur radio station up there. And you have to wait for it to go overhead, and you have to pray that actually someone's out there operating it. And you can talk to them. I never actually talked to the space station, but I did listen to the Mir space station back when it was in orbit. And basically, I had my old 386, and I used to load this program onto it that would predict satellite passes, and it was just unbelievable. Basically, for like an entire week, it would pass more or less around over my house around noon, and you would listen to it. And this was Shannon Lucid. God, I can't believe I remembered that name. She was an amateur radio operator, and she used to talk to her daughter who was on the ground. And you would hear her pass overhead, and you'd watch, you'd get the time of, like, you know, you'd start to hear the signal at 12:33 and you'd lose the signal at 12:50, and sure enough, 12:33 on the dot, you would start hearing a signal and you'd start hearing her talk, and she'd get louder and louder and louder and louder, and then she'd get softer and softer and softer and softer as she passed further off. It's amazing. There's also yeah, it was great. I could never talk to her because my radio was too dinky, but it was fun to listen to.
Yeah, I you know, I always wanted to, and I had some program called TrackSat, and I could always tell when it was overhead. Yeah, and it seemed to be the one that most people I know had, but I never, you know, I couldn't pull in any signal with my little radio, so didn't get to hear much of that.
Pulling in signals are the easy part. The hard part is figuring it all out and you know, talking to it, and that's when you get to get the crazy antenna. Another thing you can do, a lot of people modify your wireless access points to with better antennas. And legally, you are not entitled to do that unless, you know, but if you get your amateur radio license, you are, because a lot of people don't know this. 2.4 gigahertz is actually assigned primarily to the amateur radio band. And the access points are just sort of, they're secondary licensees. So you can basically make your wireless access point talk at 1.5 kilowatts.
And that's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's insane. I don't know why anyone would want to do this, but you can if you would like to. Go right ahead. It's amateur radio. Go ahead. You know, go do it. There's some caveats to this. Like with amateur radio, you have to like ID yourself, and you have to do. You can't use encryption. We'll talk about more about that later. And there's some legal issues around this. But yeah, you can. There's people who set up access points at like 50 watts. It's amazing.
Wow.
And it's not just 802.11b. You can do microwave. There's something called radio teletype, which is talks at a speedy 45 bits per second.
Wow.
There's also something called packet, which is 1200 bits per second. But those are fairly long range. I mean, radio teletype is designed to like talk internationally, like, you know, hook up your radio teletype and talk down to southern Indonesia. Packet is very much local, but far long distance. Like, I can talk to, like, Boston with my radio from my current system, which is a good, you know, 50 miles away. Another data thing that I can do is, you can do is something called APRS, which is, we're not sure what exactly it stands for. It's either Automatic Packet Reporting System or Automatic Position Reporting System.
Yeah, I say position.
I say position too, but you never know. We were looking it up with Kenwood, and they said it's either or.
Yeah, Kenwood.sk, by the way. I'm not really sure what SK is, but...
Sri Lanka? I don't know.
No idea.
You never know. It really deserves its own show. Basically, what it is you hook a GPS up to a radio, and the radio broadcasts your position all the time. Basically, you're completely dropping your docks every time your radio transmits. Check it out, APRSworld.net. It's a really fun. It's fun. It's fun to look at. Something called direction finding. It's a lot more fun than it sounds. Basically, what you do is if you need to find the transmitter, you hook up a very directional antenna, and you basically plot the position out onto, you know, I'm getting a stronger signal over here, therefore it's in this direction, and you try to hunt down the transmitter. It's handy in certain situations, but people have just tried to make it a game, and apparently it's one of the big things out there right now.
You know what? People don't really get it, but I think about a lot of people going around war driving. Like, you know, it's pretty much the same thing, except you can do this from a lot longer distance, and you have a final goal. You're not just like collecting access points.
You know, very much that is a very good example. I didn't even think of that.
So I think that stuff is really cool. But I never had the time to do it. And when I first got into packet radio, I didn't even have a car, so there wasn't too many direction finding or fox hunting competitions that I could really do. So.
Nope. Actually, my university club actually set a bunch of people loose in Boston Common and hit a transmitter there. That's what they did. That was pretty fun. I didn't actually participate in that. I already graduated, but it sounded pretty cool. Something called IRLP, which stands for Internet Radio Linking Project. Basically, it's a bunch of radio stations hooked up with VoIP. And, like, for example, I can talk to a local station in, like, say, my Boston, and they'll use their VoIP connection over to, and I can be transmitting over in Alaska. Check it out at irlp.net. I actually haven't fooled around with this, but it always sounds really cool. There's actually no nodes in my area, so as far as I know. Just in generally, use radio frequencies people have never heard of, find a use for them, try to market it, maybe get a patent, and just generally mess around. What you can't do, swear, cuss, etc. A.K.A. if you set up your data connection, you can't serve porn on it. They try to make a very family-friendly atmosphere. And there are people out there that will gladly report you to the FCC if they try to do that. One of the more asinine restrictions, in my opinion, is you can't play music at all. I don't understand why the reasoning for this rule is, but you just can't do it.
Ah, I know why.
Well, I figure it's just something to do to, like, you know, don't have competition with the radio stations, with commercial radio stations.
Actually, no. And I talked to a bunch of people, the VEC when I took my test, and a bunch of other people. And they, first of all, they yelled at me and said I should have known the answer because it was on the test, which I felt kind of silly about. But they said the purpose of amateur radio is to establish two-way communication, with the exception of beacons. So if you're playing music, you know, unless you're playing music so somebody else can play music back, there's really no reason to do it. So.
Well, what I always found wacky is, like, if something is playing music in the background, that's technically illegal. I mean, what happens if my cell phone goes off and I decide to have the, a new Kanye West single. God, I can't believe I just said that. Man, they're repressing my rights.
I think it is silly. They should have just said, you know, your communication has to be two-way, you know, all the time, except in the case of a beacon, because beacons are basically stations that broadcast a constant signal so you can kind of check conditions. You say, oh, this thing is 20 miles away and I can barely receive it. The conditions on this band may not be good today. But
yes.
I think that the restriction of no music is ridiculous. Maybe it's a copyright thing, but if I wrote my own music, and I can't play that in the background while I'm talking, that's a little ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know. Lord only knows. You can't encrypt your signal or use secret codes. Like, for example, you can't, if you have your access point, there's a big debate whether or not you can use wireless encryption protocol on it. Some people are saying, yes, you can, because it keeps non-licensed amateurs away from it. But you have to post your encryption key somewhere online or publicly accessible. A lot of people say, no, you can't use the encryption protocol at all, blah. So, Lord only knows.
There is actually an exception to this rule in amateur radio.
Oh.
There are two exceptions. One is more specific than the other. The first exception is if you run an amateur satellite, you are allowed to have your satellite uplink, you know, for controlling the parameters of it and everything that's running on it. You can have that encrypted because they don't want people taking your satellite and just, like, turning everything off and breaking it.
own your satellite.
owning somebody's satellite.
Owned your satellite.
Yeah, that would be awesome. The other exception is that they're now starting to allow people to experiment with spread spectrum signals, which are basically... you know, signals that kind of jump around all over the place to avoid people being able to pick them up, or to avoid interference. Like if it's transmitting over a wider bandwidth, if there's an interference in one small part, it doesn't really affect the whole signal. Some people consider spread spectrum encryption, which it's really, in some ways it is, in some ways it's not, but they're letting people do that, and I remember there being a process that you had to go through to let the FCC know that you were experimenting with it. I don't know if that process still exists, but in any case, those are the two exceptions to the encryption rule that I know of.
That's interesting. I didn't know either of them. The other few things you really just can't do is generally be an asshole and or do naughty things on air. And basically, the way to avoid this is just sit down and listen for a bit. You know, after you pass your test, maybe buy a radio, because it does take about a week for the license to show up and the paperwork to go through. And just listen to how everyone talks and how everyone treats each other. Find out how everyone behaves and just, you know, emulate. That's what I did. Let's toss some disclaimers on there. Ham radio, while not exclusively, is, you know, it's dominated by old timers who are very set in their ways. We'll just, you know, just get it out there. We won't even attempt to say it. I have been poo-pooed regularly by people like these old timers when I tell them I hardly talk on the radio. I just use digital modes and I use my computers to talk to each other. But, you know, believe it or not, I'm quite shy, I guess you could say. I don't really think talking to random strangers was, you know, it was never really my cup of tea. And whatever people may say, just don't let it discourage you. Also, you know, a good portion of these people will still be kind and gladly help you with, you know, they'll be able to teach you stuff that you didn't know in the first place. So, I mean, don't bite the hand that feeds you, but the same type, just don't be discouraged if they, you know, yell at you. And that's amateur radio. We just scratched the surface. We didn't even talk about tons of stuff you can do with this. This is just sort of wet your whistle and at least attempt to get a few people interested.
Yeah, it's such a broad hobby. Like, if you're the person like you who likes to do data communication, there's something in it for you. If you want to do satellites, there's something in it for those people. If you want to do short-range communication, long-range communication, if you want to work with, you know, microwaves and do point-to-point, like 30 gigahertz links or something, you can mess around with that stuff, high bandwidth applications. There's so much in it. Anything you can imagine that you can do with the radio, whether it's voice or data, people are doing it in ham radio, and they're pioneering things. And a lot of people who work in ham radio end up making, you know, discoveries in new areas of radio, new modulation methods and stuff like that. So if you're into discovering new stuff, ham radio is the place to do it.
If you're just messing around with electronics, ham radio is the place to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you can even build your own radios. I know guys that used to do that. And that, I'm not an electronics guy at all, but these guys were all into it, and they were all making super high-power radios. They were building their own antennas. And if you like to do stuff with your, build stuff with your hands, and you like electronics, ham radio's got a spot for you, definitely.
Building your own antenna is easy. I mean, hell, I've done that, and I'm the same boat as you. I am not a hardware person.
Hmm.
But, the
one ham radio guy that I know who builds his own antennas, he's actually an antenna engineer. So when I say he builds an antenna, like, he designs it in his basement, and it's always a pretty serious antenna. It's not something like he found plans on the internet to do it. He, like, sat around and figured out, okay, well, you know, I'm going to tweak this antenna design that I was using last week. So some people
okay,
are
I just,
into it like
I just
that.
Follow instructions on the internet.
Yeah, no, this guy designs stuff from scratch. He does it for work, so he just comes home and does it for fun, too.
Hey, it's like a lot like us.
Yeah.
Announcements. Do you have announcements? I don't have announcements.
No.
All right.
No,
what do you have for shouts this week?
I'm definitely not going to shout Stank, because he's just a bad person. I don't know. I did have somebody that I wanted to shout out. You know, I wanted to shout out Ponyboy for doing his little show there. I appreciate it. Listening to it today at work, and it was awesome.
What show is this?
Belcore Radio.
Oh yes, Belcore Radio. Yeah, I can't believe I just said that. That's actually one of the shows I have listened to, but I completely am drawing a blank on it right now.
Yeah, I was drawing a blank because I listened to about 20 shows today. So if I've messed that up, then I apologize. But I'm pretty sure Belcore Radio is 21.
Yeah, because
stuff.
You're a noob and you had to work today.
Yeah. Oh man, don't remind me.
Yeah. What did we want to have for site of the week? We were talking about, we should, oh yeah, what's your little site of the week there with your software radio?
Oh man, I don't have the link with me right now. If you
that's harsh. What's the name of the radio? It's the GNU Radio.
GNU Radio, and if you search for GNU Radio on Google, you will definitely find something. And the radio that I bought is the USRP. It's Universal Software Radio Radio Peripheral, and it's available from Etus.com, that's ETTUS.com. This guy basically designed it with the GNU radio team, and he sends the schematics out to a company that builds the boards for him. But if you are psychotic and inclined to get them built yourself, all of the design specs are open source, from, you know, just the general RF data, like, you know, it puts out this much power on these frequencies and stuff like that, all the way down to the actual schematic that this guy uses to build the boards he mails out. So everything is open source.
That's
pretty cool. The source code, the, you know, the software, the hardware, everything. And maybe sometime we'll talk about software radio in the future. It is definitely awesome.
Yeah, work on your notes for that. That sounds pretty cool, because I have no clue exactly what it... I have an idea what it does, but it sounds pretty neat, and I want to learn more. And their website sucks. But email, radiobinrev.com, like it hasn't changed over the past 130 episodes. Closing music tonight is by Trentian. It's called the Final Fantasy VII Sector 7 Half Rot the Angel OC Remix. Available at ocremix.org. I think that's sort of wrapped up the show tonight. Sort of got sidetracked talking about phones, but other than that, it went pretty well. So we will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack handband.
Baby, 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 baby